This edition of The Debate from Mikhail Vitak, my entire team in the capital of Tehran. It's goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with verses 162 to 165 of chapter Al-An'am from the Holy Quran, recited by Murtaza Fatemi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. قل إن صلاتي ونسكي ومحياي ومماتي لله رب العالمين لا شريك له وبذلك أمرت وأنا أول المسلمين قل أغير الله أبغي ربا وهو رب كل شيء ولا تكسب كل نفس إلا عليها ولا تزر وازرة وزر أخرى ثم إلى ربكم مرجعكم فينبئكم
In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful. Say, surely my prayer and my sacrifice and my life and my death are all for Allah, the Lord of the worlds. No associate has He, and this am I commanded, and I am the first of those who submit. Say, what shall I seek, a Lord other than Allah? And He is the Lord of all things, and no soul earns evil but against itself, and no bearer of burden shall bear the burden of another. Then to your Lord is your return, so He will inform you of that in which you differed. And He it is who has made you successors in the land, and raised some of you above others by various grades, that He might try you by what He has given you. Surely, your Lord is quick to requite evil, and He is most surely the forgiving, the merciful.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Israel keeps pounding the Gaza Strip and halts international aid deliveries to the besieged territory. At least 218 Palestinians have been killed since May the 10th. Palestinian officials call on the United Nations for more humanitarian aid for Gaza as the Security Council fails to find a consensus on the violence. Fresh protests erupt in several cities across the U.S. in solidarity with Palestinians in Gaza. Hello, everyone. Welcome. Israel keeps pounding the Gaza Strip through air, sea, and land. The regime has bombed more civilian targets while keeping in place its blockade on the war-torn territory. The latest Israeli attacks hit the central Gaza Strip and the north of Gaza City. One Palestinian was killed as a result. The death brings to 218 the number of Gazans killed since the Israeli aggression began on May the 10th. Nearly half of them are women and children. Meanwhile, Israel stopped an international convoy of humanitarian supplies at Kerem Abu Salem crossing on Tuesday. The regime has cited what it called a mortar attack in the area. The UN says tens of thousands of Gazans have been displaced due to the Israeli attacks.
You ask about the total number of displaced. What I can say is, for sure, it is above 52,000 in total. That is the last number that, since the start of the escalation, and as of yesterday, 132 buildings comprising 621 housing and commercial units have been destroyed. In addition, 316 housing units have been severely damaged and rendered uninhabitable.
According to the UN Humanitarian Agency, nearly 450 buildings in the Gaza Strip have been demolished or badly damaged so far. That includes six hospitals and nine primary care health centers. Meanwhile, the World Health Organization says Gaza is facing a severe shortage of medical supplies, a risk of waterborne diseases, and the spread of COVID-19 in overcrowded shelters. Palestinian Foreign Minister Riyad al-Maliki has urged the International Criminal Court to investigate Israel's war crimes. Maliki made the appeal in a letter to the ICC prosecutor's office. He called for accountability for the war crimes and crimes against humanity last that continue that to be committed in the West Bank, East Jerusalem, Al-Quds, and the Gaza Strip. Meanwhile, the Palestinian ambassador to the UN has criticized the Security Council for its inaction towards Israel.
This is what we are talking about. The Security Council is a shameful act of not even expressing a unified position calling for the end of this aggression. Facts speak for themselves. Until now, nobody is succeeding in bringing Israel into compliance to this global call for ending this aggression. Where should the poor go? Where should the weak go? Isn't the UN the house of all people? And isn't it the house to help the vulnerable?
Mansour made the comments following a UN Security Council meeting on Palestine. He called on the UN to issue an emergency call for humanitarian assistance to the Palestinian people in Gaza. At the same meeting, the Algerian representative to the UN also criticized the international community for remaining, quote, deaf and silent to the outcry of the Palestinian people. The Security Council held its fourth meeting on Tuesday, but it failed to reach a consensus on the Israeli violence due to U.S. objection. China said the U.S. prevented the council from speaking with one voice. Well, on that note, I'm going to bring in Jay Tarapel, political analyst, via Skype out of Sydney. It's good to have you with us. Tell me what you think about this sort of inaction. You know, isn't that interesting? You have four meetings so far, all inconclusive.
Yeah, I mean, the U.S. has blocked a joint statement calling for an immediate ceasefire. And, you know, this isn't unusual. We normally expect the United States to jump in on the side of Israel. I mean, that's nothing new. But it also suggests that Israel does not want a ceasefire, because if they wanted one, they would get the United States to demand one at the United Nations. It shows that Israel is only intending to murder Palestinians in very large numbers. And I believe there's two major reasons for this. The first reason is to make life unbearable for the Palestinians. I mean, the West Bank is not as bad as Gaza. Gaza is just utter devastation, combined with a long siege. So it's very difficult for the Palestinians to even rebuild their homes when they're destroyed, because the Israelis have complete control and over the territory. And so the Israelis actually have a doctrine, a policy that they call mowing the grass. So every 3 or 4 or 5 years, they will bomb Gaza. They'll flatten it using their air force with like strikes against civilian targets. And you know, the thing is, they actually don't have any excuses for this, because when people talk about the resistance, Hamas, they say that they're firing indiscriminate rockets. Well, I mean, the Israelis don't have the problem of having inferior rockets. They have quite sophisticated weaponry, which means that when they're killing people, it's actually quite targeted. So the way that they leveled that media building, that was targeted. They're hitting civilian infrastructure. So that's one reason, mowing the grass, punishing the Palestinians, making them as uncomfortable as possible so that they eventually leave. But I think there's also another reason, and the second reason is that the IDF wants to advertise its weaponry for major customers all over the world. So unfortunately, the way a lot of military people who buy Israeli weaponry would see this is that they would see the effectiveness of the Israeli killing machine, and they think, you know, we want to buy those weapons. Unfortunately, that's the kind of cynical world we live in. And of course, you know, even though there's a lot of misinformation about this war, so people say Hamas wants to destroy Israel and wipe Israel off the map, even though it's Israel that's wiping Palestine off the map, what people forget is that in 2006, Hamas was willing to accept the two-state solution. It's Israel that did not want the two-state solution because it wants to keep the settlements and it wants all of that land for themselves so that they can have it exclusively for their tribe, for their ethno-state. This is a racist ethnic cleanser. That's what we're seeing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, back to that issue of the UN, Mr. Tarapel, I'm just curious, you know, for the sake of our viewers, if there is this certain country or state in the world that does wrong in any way, and then it's doing wrong, it's got the protest
of, you know, the members of the public from all over the world. Don't you think, you know, there should be some kind of mechanism in place to hold the perpetrator to account for it, you know, and to at least come up with a statement, you know, to say that this is wrong. Mm. Now, the UN is thought to be that world body, obviously, you know, not doing its job when it comes to matters like this. What does that tell you about the impartiality of the UN, and where does that leave everybody for actually holding somebody accountable when it comes to, you know, I don't want to use the term, but crimes like this, you know, where does that take us? To which international agency or to who?
Well, I mean, the UN is neither here nor there. It's neither good nor bad. It really depends on the particular conflict and the balance of forces between countries. As for the protests that you mentioned and the ability to move this forward, I think that the argument about Israel should actually be escalated a little bit more. Israel is not just a threat to Palestine. I mean, they have a doctrine called the Samson Doctrine, which says that if they ever feel like the state is on the verge of collapse, then they will start letting nukes fly. This is something that I think Western audiences in particular should be wary of, because it's Western support for Israel that encourages their quite frankly, insane policies. But also, I mean, Israel has been responsible for destabilizing the entire region. I mean, your own country, Iran, for example, I mean, is prevented from developing nuclear energy. Now, if Iran developed nuclear energy, it would mean that oil prices would actually fall for a lot of the surrounding countries. China and India would get cheaper oil. But Iran is being prevented by Israel from developing, and this is bad for the entire Eurasian continent, and Israel is ultimately responsible for preventing Iran from developing in this way, because it supports the sanctions and it gets its allies to support hostility towards Iran. Also, the invasion of Iraq completely devastated the region. This country, Israel, this so-called country, is a threat to the entire Eurasian continent.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Many thanks, Jay Tarapa, political analyst out of Sydney, Australia, over that. I really appreciate your time. Have a good day. Four Palestinians have been killed and scores injured in the occupied West Bank as people continue to protest the Israeli regime's deadly aggression against the Gaza Strip. Three people were fatally shot by Israeli forces at the entrance to Al-Bira, northeast of Ramallah. Another man was killed earlier on Tuesday in Hebron, also known as Al-Khalil, where people rallied in their thousands. Palestinian authorities say Israeli forces have killed 24 Palestinians in the West Bank since May the 10th. Israeli forces also wounded five people in Lebanon, where a demonstration against the regime's atrocities was held. Meanwhile, a general strike was observed across the West Bank and the East Jerusalem against the Israeli attacks on people in the occupied territories and Gaza.
Palestinians have staged a nationwide general strike across the occupied West Bank and in historic Palestine, the lands occupied in 1948, to protest the ongoing Israeli bombardment of the besieged Gaza Strip. The strike has led to the suspension of all economic activities and the closure of educational institutions across the occupied West Bank. Shops and private institutions in Palestinian areas in historic Palestine also closed down. Meanwhile, thousands of Palestinians took to the streets in Ramallah to support the strike.
We won't tolerate the continuation of the occupation. It must end. The Israeli regime carries out the ugliest practices against our people wherever they are. And then there are the settlers' ongoing violence. And now there are these airstrikes that are killing children and innocent people.
Protesters from all walks of life and of all ages participated in the rally that headed to the northern entrance of the city, where Israeli military checkpoint and illegal settlement of Beit Il are located. The protesters held Palestinian flag and chanted anti-Israeli slogans in solidarity with the resistance in the Gaza Strip.
Today, we are rising against Israel's airstrikes on the Gaza Strip and its general oppression against Palestinians here in the West Bank.
We are protesting against the ongoing violence against us, the Palestinians, and also to show support for the resistance in Gaza.
The rally, meanwhile, turned violent, with the Israeli soldiers at the checkpoint firing live ammunition. Palestinians in the occupied territories and historic Palestine have united with a general strike and a day of rage to send in numerous messages. On the top, an expression of anger against this barbaric aggression by the Israeli occupation. Mona Qandil, occupied Ramallah.
Protesters have marched in different cities across the U.S. in solidarity with the Palestinian people.
Free! Free!
Demonstrators took to the streets in the city of Dearborn in the state of Michigan. They condemn Tel Aviv's relentless onslaught on Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip. Protesters also denounced Washington's unflinching support for the Israeli regime. Also in Washington, D.C., protesters gathered outside the Israeli embassy to denounce the regime's brutalities against Palestinians. They chanted slogans in support of Palestinians and in condemnation of Tel Aviv's acts of violence. Several cities across the world have witnessed anti-Israeli protests over the past week as Tel Aviv has intensified its aggression against Palestinians. British politicians have come out in force to condemn anti-Semitism after a video online appeared to show people shouting anti-Semitic abuse from a car in London, but have been reluctant to condemn the Israeli onslaught against the people of Gaza. Ahmad Caballo is on that story.
Four people have been arrested after police investigated a video showing anti-Semitic language being shouted from a convoy of cars covered with Palestinian flags in North London. The passengers were heard shouting offensive statements and threats against Jewish people. The incident has received widespread condemnation from British Labour and Conservative MPs and government ministers alike. Yet for some, what's more worrying is the fact that this stunt carried out by a handful of anti-Semites who have already been arrested has received more condemnation than more than 200 Palestinians killed in the besieged Gaza Strip by Israeli forces.
This is very terrifying that some words, however wrong, uttered in a demo in the heat of the moment by people who are confused are more shocking to them than the mass murder of women, men and babies. That is a sign of inhumanity to me.
Unsurprisingly, the government minister, Robert Jenrick, attempted to use the incident to conflate anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism.
Understand anti-Semitism. That's one of the reasons why we were the first country in the world to sign up to the IRA definition, which makes it abundantly clear that anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism.
Haim Brashit, a Jewish anti-Zionist activist whose parents survived the Holocaust, doesn't see it that way.
It doesn't matter what they say. Anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism are actually not the same thing. They are opposites. Anti-Zionists are by definition against racism, and therefore they could not and are not anti-Semites. This, I hope, one day will be clear also to Robert Jenrick and to Keir Starmer and to Johnson.
The vile anti-Semitism that was on full display on this road has rightfully captured the attention of all sides of the British political establishment, with government ministers vowing to take action. The question that many are asking is, what will it take for the suffering of the Palestinian people to receive a similar response? Ahmed Cabello, London.
China has accused the U.S. of threatening the peace and stability of the Taiwan Strait amid heightened tensions between the two powers. A reaction came a day after a U.S. warship again sailed through a sensitive waterway between Taiwan and mainland China. China's Eastern Theater Command expressed strong opposition and condemned the move. The command said such actions send wrong signals to pro-independence forces in Taiwan. The U.S. Navy said its destroyer had conducted what it called a routine transit in accordance with international law. China considers Taiwan part of its own territory and is opposed to the island's push for independence. Well, that's it for me.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Eastern Tales. Roundtable Discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Supplication on Wednesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who appointed the night to be a garment, and sleep for a rest, and day he appointed for a rising. To thee belongs praise, for thou roused me from my sleep. And hadst thou willed, thou wouldst have made it everlasting, an everlasting praise that will never be cut off, and whose number the creatures will never count. O Allah, to thee belongs praise, for thou created, then proportioned, and ordained, and decreed, and gave death and bestowed life, and made sick and healed, and made well and afflicted, and sat upon the throne and encompassed the kingdom. I supplicate thee with the supplication of one whose mediation is weak, whose stratagems have been cut off, whose term has drawn near, whose expectation from this world has shrunk, whose neediness for thy mercy has intensified, whose remorse for his neglect has become great, whose slips and stumbles have become many, and whose repentance is devoted sincerely to thy face. So bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and his household, the good, the pure. And provide me with the intercessions of Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, and deprive me not of his companionship. Surely thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, decree for me on Wednesday four things. Induce me to be strong in obedience to thee, to be joyful in worshipping thee, to be desirous of thy reward, and to abstain from that which would make incumbent upon me thy painful punishment. Thou art gentle to whom thou wilt.
About you, IRIB English Radio.
Thank you.
log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Communicate. Ever since Bernie Sanders dropped out of the presidential race in 2020, throwing his support behind Joe Biden, and the more recent Force the Vote controversy among progressives in the Democratic Party. So let's take a closer look at this progressive label and the people supposedly spearheading its movement. I'm Richard Medhurst, and this is The Communique. Heralded as a firebrand progressive, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was elected to represent New York's 14th congressional district in 2018. As the youngest congresswoman in U.S. history, she unseated one of the most important figures in the Democratic Party, Joe Crowley, in an upset victory that caught people way off guard and was even featured in a Netflix documentary, Knock Down the House. Along with other progressive newcomers elected to the House in historic races, AOC and her colleagues came to be known collectively as the Squad. This included Ilhan Omar of Minnesota, a Muslim of Somali origin who first came to the United States as a refugee, as well as Michigan's Rashida Tlaib of Palestinian origin, and Ayanna Pressley, becoming the first black woman from Massachusetts to be elected to Congress. Together, they threatened to take on the D.C. political establishment, engaging in bold direct action, holding sit-ins and protesting outside Speaker Nancy Pelosi's office. Indeed, at the time, these self-styled socialists or social democrats seemed to represent a new generation that wasn't afraid to break from traditional liberal orthodoxy.
If you're a one-term Congress member, so what? You can make 10 years worth of change in one term if you're not afraid.
AOC would decry Israel's massacre of Palestinians during the Right to Return marches in 2018-2019 and said that the Democratic Party needed new leadership and need not remain under the old guard of Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. Indeed, these new faces of the Democratic Party's left wing were not the usual old white men one was accustomed to seeing running the political affairs of the nation, but instead young, vibrant women of color who were willing to play hardball with Democrats and push for universal health care, a $15 minimum wage, action on climate change, and policies rooted in human rights. At least that's how it started. Whether it was the persistent and sustained attacks from Republicans or unrelenting pressure to conform to Democratic leadership, whatever it was, somewhere along the way, these so-called progressives, regarded by many as heroes, became the opposite of everything they had campaigned for. For many people who helped them with their election campaigns, canvassed in the streets, donated their hard-earned money, and put in so much time and energy to get them elected, this felt like a betrayal. The first warning signs began appearing when we heard last year in 2020 from Politico how AOC was firing her former staff that got her elected and replacing them with establishment figures. Not only that, but she wasn't extending support to other progressive challengers for fear of angering her party colleagues. Again, the entire premise of the progressive strategy is to challenge and unseat establishment Democrats. Instead of supporting new challengers, AOC was protecting the party. Now AOC was no longer protesting and holding sit-ins in Speaker Pelosi's office. Now she was calling Nancy Pelosi Mama Bear. Progressives began doing other inexplicable things, like Ilhan Omar voting present on a motion to recognize the Armenian genocide. Ayanna Pressley and Ro Khanna went on to vote in favor of a resolution condemning the Boycott and Divestment Sanction Movement, or BDS, which is a nonviolent peaceful protest against Israeli apartheid. Ilhan Omar even went on to sign a letter calling on then-Secretary of State Mike Pompeo to push for a renewal of the arms embargo on Iran before its expiry in late 2020. During the coronavirus crisis, corporations received the largest giveaway in history. The entire U.S. government, both Republicans and Democrats, all voted to give them trillions of dollars. Bernie Sanders and AOC came to the floor to give fiery speeches and pretend that they were outraged that so much money was being given to companies who don't need it, favoring them over working-class Americans who were without jobs, healthcare, or wages. And in the end, after all that talk, they still voted for the bill. They voted for the CARES Act, the HEROES Act, and virtually every so-called relief package, giving crumbs to the people and the lion's share to corporate America. Now, the latest so-called progressives to be elected to Congress recently include Jamal Bowman to New York's 16th congressional seat. He unseated a longtime ally of the Israeli lobby, Elliot Engel. And in order to prove that he wasn't a threat to Israeli interests, Bowman published an open letter in Riverdale Press confirming that he is opposed to the BDS movement, the most peaceful and nonviolent form of protest that anyone can adopt against Israel's oppression of Palestinians. As a matter of fact, Bowman admitted that former President Barack Obama was so impressed by this open letter that he even called him to endorse his candidacy. Another self-styled progressive named Richie Torres was elected to New York's 15th congressional district.
Hello, I'm Richie Torres. I am Afro-Latino, LGBTQ, millennial, progressive, and pro-Israel.
It's once again so astonishing to me how these politicians claim their politics and policies are rooted in human rights as they continue to protect Israel from any criticism and to be in a party in a government that subsidizes Israel's illegal occupation and oppression of Palestinians. During the 2020 Democratic primaries, when it became clear that Bernie Sanders' agenda became a threat to the Democratic Party, once again, Barack Obama made a few calls behind the scenes, persuading many of the challengers in the field to all drop out and rally behind Joe Biden. Once the race had been narrowed down to just two candidates with the entire weight of the establishment behind Joe Biden, it didn't take long for Bernie Sanders to drop out. Bernie Sanders had prided himself in building a popular grassroots movement made up of all age groups, ethnicities, and backgrounds. Instead of using his popularity and political capital to actually advance the progressive agenda, once again, Bernie Sanders pledged his support behind the establishment pick, Hillary Clinton in 2016, and now Joe Biden in 2020, abandoning his movement. The squad who, for the most part, had endorsed Bernie Sanders also rallied behind Joe Biden. Despite Joe Biden's abysmal record of working with segregationists, trying to cut Social Security, supporting the Iraq War, pushing the war on drugs, catering to the credit card industry, to the banks, to Big Pharma, and virtually every branch of the American corporate machine, these so-called progressives decided to endorse him and campaign on his behalf. How could these people who say their politics are all about elevating the working class and upholding human rights, who want Medicare for all, who want to increase Social Security, cut military spending, who stand on the opposite side of Joe Biden on virtually every issue, how can they just casually pledge their support to him? The line that we kept hearing from them and in the media was that, yeah, you know, Joe Biden may be terrible on this issue or that issue, but once he's elected, we'll push him left. We have to elect him because we have no choice. Donald Trump is so terrible. He's an existential threat. He's the most dangerous president in modern history. Which, again, as horrible as Donald Trump surely is, that title definitely belongs to George W. Bush and his administration. But, of course, all these neocons were themselves recruited, like Colin Powell speaking at the Democratic National Convention, in order to stump for Joe Biden. So, once again, I ask these so-called progressives, how on earth can you remain in a party that brings a war criminal and a mass murderer like Colin Powell to speak at your convention? If neoconservatives like Bill Kristol, George Bush, and other villainous figures like that are siding with you, don't you think there's something fundamentally wrong going on here? The entire media apparatus and Democratic Party acted as if Donald Trump had appeared out of the blue. They conveniently left out the fact that Joe Biden is the reason someone like Donald Trump was elected in the first place. Biden spent his entire career, some 40-plus years in government, building the system, being an architect of the neoliberal policies that eroded manufacturing, that took jobs overseas, deregulated Wall Street and the economy, let corporations run wild, and created so much of the economic misery and turmoil that could allow someone as heinous as Donald Trump to even win over a neoliberal figure like Hillary Clinton in the first place. Once again, the so-called left wing or progressive wing of the Democratic Party, the squad, they proved that they were willing to put their party first, not policies, not principles, nor people. In December 2020, with Speaker Pelosi's re-election as House Speaker coming up, an opportunity arose for progressives in Congress to actually do something. Many pundits, commentators, and journalists on the left, such as Jimmy Dore, Breonna Joy Gray, and NFL player Justin Jackson, argued in favor of force the vote. Earlier in January this year, Nancy Pelosi was re-elected Speaker of the House. With the final tally at 216 to 209, she won against McCarthy by a razor-thin margin of just 7 votes. If progressives had banded together, they could have easily leveraged their votes for her in exchange for a vote on Medicare for All. Instead, they rolled over like faithful, obedient poodles, and every single one of them voted for Nancy Pelosi to be reelected House Speaker. Without demanding a single concession, Remember, this is the same woman who refused to impeach George Bush over the Iraq War, even when she knew that he was lying about Iraq having weapons of mass destruction. Again, just a month later, in February 2021, progressives had yet again another opportunity to push Biden left, as they claimed they would do. One of the key policies that the squad were elected on in the first place was raising the federal minimum wage from $7.25 to $15 an hour. Joe Biden made this a campaign promise. Initially, the $15 minimum wage was put into a mammoth piece of legislation containing up to $1.9 trillion in this so-called COVID relief bill. When Biden tried to force this bill through the Senate using budget reconciliation, the Senate parliamentarian, whose opinion is non-binding and merely advisory, said that the $15 minimum wage had to be removed. It was also claimed that Joe Manchin, a senator from West Virginia who was opposed to the $15 minimum wage being in the bill, threatened to vote against it if it was kept in there. Joe Biden pretended that his hands were tied, that he, the most powerful man in the world, the President of the United States, could not do anything because of an unelected Senate parliamentarian and a lone senator from West Virginia. Consequently, the $15 minimum wage was removed from the bill. And when the bill was sent back to the House, it passed. It passed with a razor-thin margin of 9 votes. Just 9 votes. That's all it would have taken for progressives to hold up this must-pass bill. Instead of putting their foot down and saying, no, we refuse to vote for this bill because it doesn't have the $15 minimum wage, the so-called left wing of the Democratic Party, these progressives in Congress, they just accepted it. They voted for this bill minus the $15 minimum wage. Isn't that interesting how Joe Manchin is willing to play hardball with Biden, but the progressives who claim they fight for workers won't? Not just that, but ever since Biden has taken office, AOC and her colleagues have done nothing but cover for Biden, even as he continues the very same policies they once criticized under Trump. Biden has continued to treat refugees coming to the United States in the same appalling conditions and manners as Donald Trump. Instead of calling him out for this, AOC goes on her virtual town hall and claims that what's happening at the border now is not the same, solely because Biden isn't ripping babies from their mother's arms. That's interesting because under Trump, AOC called the facilities at the U.S.-Mexico border concentration camps, with the phrase kids in cages becoming emblematic of the border crisis. Now those terms have completely disappeared from AOC's vocabulary. Right now, there are over 15,000 unaccompanied minors in custody at the U.S. border in appalling, cramped spaces. Biden has not only reopened the same camps that Donald Trump was using, he's also continuing to separate minors, but instead of doing it on the U.S. side of the border, he makes families do it for him on the Mexican side of the border. Biden refuses to accept families or adults, so the families and adults just tell their children to go on without them. The Washington Times reported in early April that the Department of Homeland Security seeks to continue construction of Trump's border wall, which so many liberals decried as racist and immoral, and now they say nothing. Biden has also requested to increase the military budget to $753 billion. That's the largest in history, even bigger than Trump's. As expected, the so-called progressives in Congress have not said a word. When Biden bombed Syria and now also plans to violate the Afghan peace deal and continue occupying Afghanistan, where is AOC? Where is the squad? Complete silence. Despite being the most popular politicians in the country, they say nothing and allow Biden to proceed unchecked with the imperialist agenda of the U.S. regime. Their silence is not incompetence, it's complicity. We'll be right back after this short break.
Communique is a program in which Richard Medhurst, the independent journalist and political commentator, gives his views of controversial issues of our time and interviews famous politicians and personalities.
Joining me is Ryan Knight. He's the host of the Amped Up podcast. Thanks for coming on the show, Ryan. It's great to have you on the program.
Hey, Richard. It's great to be here and great to see you again.
So, Ryan, I wanted to start out with this recent development that we saw in Politico, where Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez, AOC, is taking money that she fundraised and giving it to establishment Democrats. People like Alyssa Slotkin, Connor Lamb, Carolyn Bordeaux. These are people who've openly celebrated both Trump and Biden's bombings of the Middle East. They've celebrated Trump's assassination of General Soleimani. Straight up warmongers. I mean, what was your initial reaction to that?
AOC and the squad We're sent to Congress to fight back against the corrupt system, not to defend it like the corporatists do. And so if we just look at the past week and a half alone, AOC has called socialists and anyone who criticizes Joe Biden, quote-unquote, bad faith actors. Then, a few days later, she tried to say that Biden's cruelty and inhumanity at the border is somehow better than Trump's cruelty and inhumanity at the border, despite the fact that they both locked children in cages and they both are separating children from their families, except Joe Biden is just doing it on the other side of the border. And then finally, like you just said, the report came out a few days ago, or last Friday, excuse me, that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who claims to be just a people-funded grassroots candidate, was taking those grassroots donations and sending them to corporate Democrats who oppose Medicare for All and support endless wars. And this is the part we have to be clear on. Anyone who campaigns on and promises revolutionary change and takes money from poor and working class people to get power and then refuses to use their seat to actually fight for the socialist policies that they campaigned on, that is literally the definition of a bad faith actor, right? So AOC is not leading the left. She's stabbing the left in the back. And we've seen that over and over again now from, you know, go back to January. AOC and the squad did not force the vote on Medicare for All and demand concessions for their vote for Pelosi. They didn't pressure Joe Biden on the $15 minimum wage fight. And again, they continue to apologize for the corrupt establishment instead of fighting back against it. So I'm over here wondering, when does the fight begin?
So, I mean, when you heard this term, bad faith actor, coming from AOC, saying that people who say there's no progress under Joe Biden compared to Trump are privileged in their critique, I mean, who is she referring to when she says that?
Well, I also think we have to step back and realize that the Democrats control the entire government right now. They control the House, the Senate, and the White House. And they're still blaming Republicans for all of our problems, despite the fact that it's not Donald Trump anymore who's dropping the bombs and who's locking the children in cages and who's increasing the military spending and who's putting corporations over people. That's Joe Biden who's doing all those things now. So for AOC to say that those of us, you know, the activists and those in the grassroots community who are fighting back against this corrupt system and demanding representation from people who campaigned on policies, that's all we're doing. AOC and the squad ran on a set of policies. All we're telling them is you need to own up to your promises and fight for the policies you campaigned on. To call us bad faith actors because we see that, you know, Joe Biden is governing the exact same way Trump did, and basically we've just got a kinder face on the oligarchy, but all of the destruction and the damage is continuing that continued under Trump. That is very dangerous. And then we have an entire corporate media apparatus who, you know, when Trump was doing these things, when Trump was locking kids in cages and you know, engaging in endless wars and bombing Syria, the media was up in arms about it. But when Joe Biden does it, they just look the other way. And so that's why it's important for independent media and for people like me and you to hold the Democratic Party accountable, because there's no accountability in the press. And so when AOC did that, when she said that, you know, we're the bad faith actors, and then she, after that, she actually said that we need solidarity. We need to build solidarity with the Biden administration. So AOC is telling us that she wants to build solidarity with the corporate Democrats who are continuing to govern like the Republicans do. They want solidarity with the capitalist right-wing Democratic Party and its leaders, but they don't want solidarity with the grassroots. And that should concern everyone, because that's how change happens. Change happens from the grassroots. And I thought she was leading a movement. It turns out, like I said, she's stabbing the movement right in the back. And I think even sadder, her fans can't see it. There's like this new cult of personality that has developed around AOC. And it's scary.
So Ryan, you've been holding progressives accountable. What are some of the attacks and abuse that you have received or have seen others receive as a result of just calling out these politicians for rolling over and doing the bidding of the establishment?
I've been called racist, misogynist, for simply reporting what AOC did and AOC said, for simply saying that AOC gave grassroots donations to corporate Democrats. There's been people who've told me that AOC is, and I quote, unassailable. And if you look up the word unassailable in the dictionary, it literally means that you can't be questioned or challenged. And if you think that a leader cannot be questioned or challenged, you don't belong to a progressive movement. You belong to a cult of personality movement. Seriously, I mean that. And I think when you start to unpack what it is, I think that a lot of these kind of, you know, the boutique left, or they're really just liberals, to be honest. I think they're so afraid of any criticism of AOC or Bernie or the squad because they've placed all their faith in trying to reform and move the corrupt Democratic Party to the left. So they treat even valid criticisms as an attack on their belief system. But both history and our current reality have shown that the Democratic Party cannot be moved left. You cannot move a party left that is owned by Wall Street and that is owned by the military-industrial complex and that is owned by the billionaire class. And so this whole process of trying to spend all this energy to move a party left that can't be moved left would be much better spent trying to build power for the people outside of the corrupt duopoly. But they don't want to do that. They want to keep putting these heroes on a pedestal and worshiping AOC and worshiping the squad and even in some points worshiping Bernie instead of actually taking matters into our own hands and building power for the people and building like a true left working class party in our country, because we don't have that. Both parties in Washington represent big business and giant corporations. Neither party represent the people.
I mean, this cult of personality, this blind adoration of politicians is obviously not healthy. What do you think are going to be the long-term effects of that? And, you know, just on a final note, what would you like to see from these elected officials and politicians?
I would just end with, why is it fair that in the United States of America that we have two political parties that serve the interests of the capitalist class and of the giant corporations, but zero major parties that serve the interests of the working class? That is not right. That is not fair. And I would just tell people, it is you're never going to change the Democratic Party. They are going to continue to sedate the public with all these platitudes and all these promises, and then you give them power, and then they turn around and they govern just like the Republicans do for their giant corporations and for the military-industrial complex. And the insanity just keeps repeating itself over and over again. So no matter who wins the election every 4 years, the wars continue, the inequality continues, and the injustice continues. So I would tell people, stop silencing debate. Stop putting all your faith in people like AOC and Bernie Sanders and the squad, and start realizing that we have the power. You know, stop giving your power away to these politicians. Demand something for your vote. You know, get into your communities, build, do mutual aid in your own communities. Stop thinking that the only answer is trying to change a party that tells us over and over again that it hates us and wants nothing to do with progressives. You know, I feel like we're caught in this abusive relationship. So the only way to end an abusive relationship is to leave it. So I think I encourage all progressives to start working outside of the Democratic Party. It's a lost cause. It's a dead end.
Ryan Knight, thanks so much for the work you do on your podcast. Really appreciate having you on the program.
Thank you, and I hope you come back on my show again. You were awesome to have.
At the end of the day, let's be clear on something. Regardless of how much pressure these politicians face with their parties and other forces in Washington, D.C., the squad, AOC, Bernie Sanders, these are some of the most popular politicians in the United States, if not the world. They have enormous, powerful platforms which they could use to mount pressure and push the policies that they were elected to implement, but actively choose not to. As Ro Khanna himself admits, being a U.S. congressperson is one of the most privileged positions in the world. Whatever the reason behind their flip-flopping and hypocrisy, what's clear is that these are not the same people anymore. The AOC of 2018 is not the AOC of 2021. Instead of challenging Democrats from within, helping to cause more upset victories, playing hardball, playing politics correctly, pulling smart moves, they are nothing but a marketing tool designed to sheep herd Americans back into the Democratic Party, which again, by anyone's definition, is a right-wing party. They make sure that Americans never explore other options such as third parties or direct action, protesting, general strikes, rent strikes, debt strikes. Their entire purpose is to protect the establishment in its entirety and to insulate the Democratic Party and Joe Biden and Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer from criticism. The Squad and all these other so-called progressives, they're not a threat to the establishment. They are de facto the establishment, but with a new face. Remember, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party are two sides of the same coin. Their differences are minimal, and they serve the same corporate masters. They uphold U.S. hegemony. They uphold the U.S. military-industrial complex. They protect Israel. They continue to deprive their own population of basic things like healthcare and housing. People who protect that kind of political system are not your friends. People often look at FDR as a progressive champion because he passed the New Deal. But they forget that the New Deal was only passed because FDR was pressured by a coalition of socialists, communists, unionists who threatened him with revolution. The New Deal was his way of silencing them, of placating the left. And after that, he proceeded to co-opt the left in order to blunt it, to render it ineffective, and to neutralize this threat to the elite. Americans would do well to learn their own history. You don't reform the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party reforms you. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Richard Medhurst, and this is The Communique.
In the limelight.
At first, the Israeli regime acted as if the BDS movement wasn't a threat to its occupation, the policies and practices of which violate international law. But a decade after the launch of the BDS call in 2005, as the movement gained strength internationally, the Israeli regime declared war against it. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Rifat Kassis Ryder. This article is published under the heading, Boycott is a Right and a Duty. Stay tuned, please, for the details of this article. The Zionist regime's efforts to demonize the Palestinian call for boycott, divestment, and sanctions, that is, BDS, threaten a venerable form of resistance. These efforts push for the censoring of Palestinian voices and those of our allies, undermining free speech rights and academic freedom, while falsely conflating criticism of the fake regime of Israel with anti-Jewish bigotry. At first, the Zionist regime leadership acted as if the movement, BDS, wasn't a threat to its occupation, the policies and practices of which violate international law. But a decade after the launch of the BDS call in 2005, as the movement gained strength internationally, the Israeli regime declared war against it. U.S. states have now enacted some form of anti-BDS legislation. Governments, universities, and other organizations around the world have also moved to suppress the movement. In 2018, a public school employee in the U.S. state of Texas was fired for refusing to sign an anti-BDS oath embedded in her employment contract. She was told that she could no longer work in the state's public schools after she refused to pledge that she does not and will not engage in a boycott of the Israeli regime or otherwise take any action that is intended to inflict economic harm on Israel. In April of 2019, a federal court ruled that the Texas law was unconstitutional. In February this year, an appeals court determined that a similar law in the state of Arkansas violates the First Amendment. The decision was the fourth made by a federal court blocking an anti-BDS law on free speech grounds. The Zionist regime's advocates are pushing a controversial working definition of anti-Semitism that conflates criticism of the fake regime of Israel with anti-Jewish bigotry. That definition, published by an international alliance, states that anti-Semitism is a certain perception of Jews which may be expressed as hatred toward Jews. That straightforward definition is complicated by a series of contemporary examples of anti-Semitism that extend to discussion of the fake regime of Israel. The IHRA definition has already been used to suppress Palestine solidarity in Europe and North America. But like the attempts to muzzle BDS, this means of shielding the fake regime of Israel from criticism hasn't gone unchallenged. The Massachusetts House of Representatives recently rejected an amendment to the state budget which would have embraced the IHRA definition of anti-Semitism. Earlier this year, the Progressive Israel Network, comprised of 10 organizations, including J Street, New Israel Fund, and Americans for Peace Now, urged against the codification of the IHRA definition into U.S. law and policy or its adoption by universities and corporations. Despite attempts to undermine it, the grassroots Palestinian-led BDS movement is growing. Through academic and cultural boycotts, an increasing number of scholars and artists are rejecting invitations to participate in Israeli-sponsored events. Others are strengthening the economic boycott through their example. Late last month, Charlie Pillsbury and four other descendants of the founder of the namesake food brand endorsed the boycott of the company so long as it operates a factory in an illegal West Bank settlement. Palestinian Christians, lay people, and clergy representing the historic churches of Palestine joined the boycott call in A Moment of Truth, a profoundly theological document, a confession of faith and a call to action. In the document, Palestinian Christians reject anti-Semitism and assure Jewish neighbors that we are able to love and live together after ending the occupation and establishing justice, they said. In the meantime, they declared that their option as Christians in the face of the Israeli occupation is to resist. It is a right and a duty for the Christian. They added that it is resistance with love as its logic, for it must find human ways that engage the humanity of the enemy. As Palestinians seeking to end the Zionist regime's brutal 54-year occupation, they ask those who would vilify boycotts? If not this means to resist injustice, what is left to them?
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Allama Hassanzada Amuli is not only actually a philosopher, but a very comprehensive scholar that we have. And he is amazingly expert in many different fields of Islamic studies, and not only Islamic studies, but also different branches of sciences, for example, mathematics, fiqh.
We always need a teacher, and especially in the field of mysticism, you yes. cannot obviously grow unless until you have a teacher. So we definitely need a teacher. Mm-hmm. And the way he had his own teachers, the way he remembered his teachers, and the way he talks about his teachers obviously shows that.